Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This article was published March 27th, 2021, and is entitled Top Few and Amdahl, where Amdahl is spelled A-M-D-A-H-L. On and off this past year, I've been fooling around with a program called Top Few, which is a link to GitHub, blogging about it in Top Few Fun and more Top Few Fun. I've just finished adding a few nifty features and making it much faster. I'm here today, first to say what's new, and then to think out loud about concurrent data processing, Go and Rust, and Amdahl's Law, of which I have a really nice graphical representation. Apologies because this is kind of long, but I suspect that most people who are interested in either are interested in both. Reminder, what TopView does is replace the sort pipe into unique-c pipe into sort-rn pipe into head pipeline that you use to do things like find the most popular API call or API caller by plowing through a log file. When last we spoke, I had a TopView implementation in the Go language running fine, and then Dirk-Jan Ochtman implemented it in Rust, and his code ran several times faster than mine, which annoyed me. So I did a bunch more optimizations and claimed to have caught up, but I was wrong, for which I apologized to Dirk-Jan. I hadn't pulled the most recent version of his code. One of the big reasons Dirk-Jan's version is faster was that he read the input file in parallel in segments, which is a good way to get data processed faster on modern multi-core processors, assuming, of course, that your I/O path has good concurrency support, which it might or might not. So I finally got around to implementing that, and sure enough, runtimes are way down. But on reasonable benchmarks, the Rust version is still faster. How much? Well, that depends. In any case, both are pleasingly fast. I'll get into the benchmarking details later, and the interesting question of why the Rust runs faster, and whether the difference is practically meaningful. But first, is parallel I/O any use? Processing the file in parallel gets the job done really a lot faster, but I wasn't convinced that it was even useful. Because on the many occasions when I've slogged away trying to extract useful truth from big honkin' log files, I almost always have to start with a pipeline full of grep and sed calls to zero in on the records I care about before I can start computing the high occurrence counts. So suppose I want to look in my Apache log file to find out which files are being fetched most often by the popular robots. I'd use something like this, and I'm going to read a shell command, good luck, egrep googlebot or bingbot or twitterbot in access log pipe to awk print $7 pipe to sort pipe to unique-c pipe to sort-rn pipe to head. Or, now that I have TopView, egrep, Googlebot, or Bingbot, or Twitterbot, access log, piped to tf-f7. Which is faster than the sort chain, but there's no chance to parallelize processing standard input. Then the light bulb went on. If -f1 stands in for awk print $1 and distributes that work out for parallel processing, why shouldn't I have -g for grep and -v for grep-v and -s for sed? Top Few by example. To find the IP address that most commonly hits your website, given an Apache log file named accesslog, tf-f1 accesslog. Let's do the same, but exclude high traffic bots. The -v option has the effect of grep-v. tf-f1-v-googlebot-v-bingbot, and I'm omitting the accesslog part of the command from here on in. The opposite. What files are the bots fetching? As you have probably guessed, -g is like grep. tf-f7-g Googlebot or Bingbot or Twitterbot. Most popular IP addresses from May 2020. tf-f1-g and regular expression that matches that May 2020. Let's rank the hours of the day by how much request traffic they get. tf-f4, and then a few -s options that are sed match replace patterns that I'm not going to read out here, but they zero in on just the hour part of the Apache log record. So, TopView distributes all that filtering and stream editing out and runs it in parallel since it's all independent, and then pumps it over, mutexed, heavily buffered, to the necessarily single thread that does the TopView counting. All of the above run dramatically faster than their shell pipeline equivalents. And they weren't exactly rocket science to build. Go has a perfectly decent regexp library that even has a regexp.replaceAll call that does the sed stuff for you. I found that getting the regular expressions right was tricky, so TopView also has a --sample option that prints out what amounts to a debug stream, showing which records it's accepting and rejecting and how the keys are being stream edited. almost ready for prime time. This is now a useful tool, for me anyhow. It's replaced the shell pipeline that I use to see what's popular in the blog this week. The version on GitHub right now is pretty well tested and seems to work fine. If you spend much time doing what we at AWS used to call log diving, you might want to grab it off GitHub. In the near future, I'm going to use GoReleaser, which is a link, so it'll be easier to pick up from whatever your usual tool depot is. And until then, I reserve the right to change option names, and so on. On the other hand, Dirk-Jan may be motivated to expand his Rust version, which would probably be faster, but as I'm about to argue, the speed-up may not be meaningful in production. Open questions. Well, there are plenty. Why is Rust faster than Go? 2. How do you measure performance anyhow? 3. And how do you profile Go? 4. Shouldn't you use mmap? 5. What does Gene Amdahl think about concurrency, and does Top View agree? 6. Didn't you do all this work a dozen years ago? Which I'll take out of order. How to measure performance. I'm using a 3.2 gigabyte file containing 13.3 million lines of Apache log file, half from 2007 and half from 2020. The 2020 content is interesting because it includes the logs from around my Amazon rage quit post, which was fetched more than everything else put together for several weeks in a row. So the data is usefully non-uniform. The thing that makes benchmarking difficult is that this kind of a thing is obviously I/O limited, and after you've run the benchmark a few times, the data is migrated into memory via file system caching. My Mac has 32 gig of RAM, so this happens pretty quick. So what I did was just embrace this by doing a few setup runs before I started measuring anything, until the runtime's stabilized and presumably little to no disk I/O is involved. This means that my results will not replicate your experience when you point Top View at your own huge log file, which it actually has to read off disk. But the technique does allow me to focus in on and optimize the actual compute. So how do you profile Go? It comes with a built-in profiler called pprof. You may have noticed that the previous sentence does not contain a link because the current state of pprof documentation is miserable. The overwhelming Google juice favorite is a link, Profiling Go Programs, from the Golang blog in 2011. It tells you lots of useful things, but the first thing you notice is that the pprof output you see in 2021 looks nothing like what that blog describes. You have to instrument your code to write profile data, which is easy and seems to cause shockingly little runtime slowdown. Then you can get it to provide a call graph, either as a PDF file or in-browser via its own built-in HTTP server. I actually prefer the PDF because the web presentation has hair-trigger pan zoom response to the point that I have trouble navigating to the part of the graph I want to look at. While I'm having trouble figuring out what some of the numbers mean, I think the output is saying something that's useful. You can be the judge. So why is Rust faster? Well, let's start by looking at the simplest possible case, scanning the whole log to figure out which URL was retrieved the most. The required argument is the same on both sides, -F7. Here's output from typical runs of the current Top View and Dirk-Jan's Rust code. So Go does 11.01 user CPU versus Rust's 10.85. It does 2.18 of system time compared to Rust's 1.42. It uses 668% CPU as opposed to Rust's 1143%, and the total elapsed time is 1.973 seconds for Go and 1.073 seconds for Rust. So the two things that stick out is that Rust is getting better concurrency and using less system time. This Mac has 8 two-thread cores, so neither implementation is maxing it out. Let's use pprof to see what's happening inside the Go code. By the way, if somebody wants to look at my pprof output and explain how I'm woefully misusing it, ping me and I'll send it over. The profiling runs numbers are 11.97 user seconds, 2.76 system seconds, 634% CPU in a total of 2.3 seconds. Like I said, profiling Go seems to be pretty cheap. Anyhow, that's 14.73 seconds of compute between user and system. The PDF of the code graph is too huge to put in line, but here's a link if you want to look. I'll excerpt screenshots. First, here's one from near the top, and the material thing about it is that it highlights at the very top, hot corner, a thing called internal read-all. So over half the time is in read bytes, which is Go's equivalent of read line. If you follow that call chain down at the bottom is a syscall, which consumes 55.36%. I'm not sure if these numbers are elapsed time or compute time, and I'm having trouble finding help in the docs. Anyhow, moving down to the middle of the call graph, this is a picture of a whole complex tangled nest of nodes, all having various things to do with garbage collection. It's complicated, but I think the message is that Go is putting quite a bit of work into memory management and garbage collection, which isn't surprising because this task is a garbage fountain, reading millions of records and keeping hardly any of that data around. The amount of actual garbage collection time isn't that big, but I also wonder how single-threaded it is because, as we'll see below, that matters a lot. Finally, down near the bottom of the graph, is the stuff about synchronization, and there are these two huge blocks for something called pthread conf signal and and pthread conf wait. The meaning of this is not obvious to me, but the file reading threads use the lock and unlock lock calls from Go's sync.mutex to mediate access to the occurrence counting thread. So what are those, 2.02 seconds and 1.32 seconds numbers down at the bottom of a CPU graph? Is the implementation spending 3.5 seconds implementing mutex? You may notice that I haven't mentioned application code. That code, for pulling out the seventh field and tracking the top occurring keys, seems to contribute less than 2% of the total time reported. My guesses. Well, clearly I need to do more work on making better use of pprof. But based on my initial investigation, I'm left with a suspicion that Rust buffers I.O. better, less system time, enjoys the benefits of forcing memory management onto the user, and, maybe, has a more efficient wait signal primitive. No smoking pistols here. I'm reminded of an internal argument at AWS involving a bunch of principal engineers about which language to use for something, and a really smart person who I respect a lot said, if you can afford garbage collection latency, use Go, and if you can't, use Rust. Shouldn't you use mmap? Well, I don't think so. I tried it on a few different systems, and mmap was not noticeably faster than just reading the file. Given the dictum that disk is the new tape, I bet modern file systems are really super optimized at sweeping sequentially through files, which is what TopView, by definition, has to do. So what does Gene Amdahl think about concurrency, and does TopView agree? Amdahl's law says that for every computing task, some parts can be parallelized and some can't. So the amount of speedup you can get by cranking the concurrency is limited by that. Suppose that 50% of your job has to be single-threaded. Then even with infinite concurrency, you can never even double the overall speed. For TopView, my measurements suggest that the single-threaded part, finding the top occurrence counts, is fairly small compared to the task of reading and filtering the data. Here's a graph of a simple TopView run with a bunch of different concurrency fanouts, and it's a curve that declines from a little over 6 seconds to just over 2 seconds as you increase the number of cores you're throwing at the problem from 1 to 8, which says concurrency helps, but only up to a point. The graph stops at 8 because that's where the runtime stopped decreasing. Let's really dig into Amdahl's law. We need to increase the compute load. We'll run the query that focuses on the popular bots. So you do egrep Googlebot. Oh, right. The old school way is you egrep Googlebot or Bingbot or Twitterbot in of your big file into tf-f7. And you discover that this takes 91 user seconds and 92 seconds elapsed time because it's entirely single-threaded. Interestingly, that regex turns out to be pretty hard work. There was 1 minute and 32 seconds elapsed, and the egrep user time was 1 minute and 31 seconds. So the top view time vanished in the static. Notice that we only used 99% of one CPU. Now let's parallelize step by step. So here's a really nice graph that shows how many CPUs it reports using as a function of how many cores I throw at the problem. And it's totally linear. It's like 1 for 1, 2 for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then when it gets to 8, it starts to sag a little bit and eventually peaks and starts coming down when you get to 15 or so. Look at that. As I increase the number of file segments to be scanned in parallel, the reported CPU usage goes up linearly until you get to about 8, where it reports 774% CPU, then starts to fall off gently until it maxes out at about 13.5 CPUs. Two questions. Why does it start to fall off, and what does the total elapsed time for the job look like? And now I have another graph which shows things starting at 150 seconds and declining to less than 30 as you increase the number of cores from 1 to 16. And it's a saggy graph. It falls steeply and then levels out. Paging Dr. Amdahl, please. This is crystal clear. You can tie up most of the CPUs the box you're running has, but eventually, runtime is hard limited by the part of the problem that's single-threaded. The reason this example works so well is that the grep for bots throws away about 98.5% of the lines in the file, so the top occurrences counter is doing almost no meaningful work compared to the heavy lifting by the regular expression appliers. That also explains why the effective CPU usage never gets up much over past 13. The threads can reg up through the file segments in parallel, but eventually there'll be more and more waiting for the single-threaded part of the system to catch up. And exactly what is the single-threaded part of the system? Well, my own payload code that counts occurrences, but Go brings along a pretty considerable runtime that helps most notably with garbage collection, but also with I/O and other stuff. Inevitably, some proportion of it is going to have to be single-threaded. So I wonder how much of the single-threaded part is application code, and how much is Go runtime. I fantasize a runtime dashboard that has pie charts for each of the 16 CPUs, showing how much of their time is going into regex bashing, and how much into occurrence counting, how much into the Go runtime, and how much into operating system overhead. One can dream. So how many cores should you use? It turns out that in Go, there's this API called runtime.numcpu that returns how many processors Go thinks it's running on. It returns 16 on my Mac. So by default, top few divides the file into that many segments, which if you look at the bottom graph above is suboptimal. It doesn't worsen the elapsed time, but it does burn a bunch of extra CPU to no useful effect. Top view has a -w or --width option to let you specify how many file segments to process concurrently. Maybe you can do better. I think the best answer is going to depend not just on how many CPUs you have, but on what kind of CPUs they are, and maybe more important, what kind of storage you're reading, how many paths it has into memory, how well its controller interleaves requests, and so on, not to mention RAM caching strategy and other things I'm not smart enough to know about. Didn't you do all this work a dozen years ago? Well, kinda. Back in the day when I was working for Sun and we were trying to sell the T-Series Spark computers, which weren't that fast, but had good memory controllers and loads of CPU threads, I did a whole bunch of research and blogging on concurrent data processing. See, these are links, concur.next and the WideFinder project. Just now I glanced back at those. Wow. That was a lot of work, and to some extent, this article revisits that territory, which is okay by me. Next, well, there are a few obvious features you could add to TopView, for example, custom field separators, but at this point, I'm more interested in concurrency and Amdahl's law and so on. I've almost inevitably missed a few important things in this fragment, and I'm fairly confident the community will correct me. Looking forward to that. That's all, folks.